shucks. It's crazy. Sorry, I didn't look at myself in the mirror before I came here. Okay, so we will continue with the slide set on optical components. And I believe when we left off last time, we were looking at amplifiers, optical amplifiers and regenerators. Okay, that's where we're going to continue onwards. Before I start off, okay, today I intentionally didn't create too many more slides, okay, so that we can probably spend a little more time on this, because these are topics that also use some of the optical ideas we learned earlier in the classes, and we are going to use them and apply them, okay, so it's important to understand them carefully. There are two classes today, and in the next week there are going to be two classes, and I'm going to have possibly, okay, not totally sure, but there's going to be some sort of a guest lecturer who's going to come in who has actually worked in an optical networks company, and he will talk about what are the industry issues and what are the things that drive them, how do they plan products, and what are the issues they face with ISPs and so on. So hopefully it'll give you a little more of a real world bent. I've tried to give you a sense of what the real world looks like and some of the trade-offs, but he's somebody who's participated in this. Okay, his name is James Manchester. He was a vice president at Telium of engineering and then of product planning apparently before he came here. Okay, so we'll probably have either a half an hour or 45 minute talk from him next week, and the remaining time in the two classes next week, my goal is to I'm going to sort of cut short the what I had originally planned. So I'm not going to cover last mile stuff and so on. So probably I look at one technology like DWDM in more detail, and look at how these components come together in the form of both systems and actually networks and so on. So probably that is going to be my plan. If I have any further time, I might give you some idea about passive optical networks and so on, which are being built. Okay, so, but if you have this sort of background, you will be able to go out in the industry and pick up anything that's needed to work in this area. Okay, so do you have any questions from the prior classes? Any concepts which are harder to understand? Okay. Sure. Okay, so I'll probably give you one more of these informal quiz type things. Either I don't know whether this is a homework coming up or not, but I'll have to double check. Probably, if not, I'll just give you an informal quiz type thing so that you can catch up on the concepts. Okay, so today we're going to look at amplifiers and regenerators. In the prior class, we looked at filters, okay, and multiplexers and so on. So we'll use some of these ideas and build upon them. Okay, so the idea of amplifiers will be built upon when we talk about lasers. Even though historically lasers were developed before amplifiers, it's easier to understand lasers once you understand what amplification is. Okay, so the idea of amplification is very simple. I mean, you have a length of fiber, you have a signal, and it dies down, and you want to regenerate it, or you want to bring it back to life. Okay, so beyond a level, you cannot distinguish it, so you have to bring it back with a component called an amplifier. Okay, so what's fancy about this? There are two types of devices. Okay, one you can call all optical amplifiers, or it's basically called optical amplifiers. And then you have things called regenerators. Okay, these things are usually things which convert the optical signal into electronics. So it's OEO, or optical electronic optical devices. Now in the regenerators itself, there are a subclass of devices called 1R, 2R and 3R. Okay. And 1R essentially means just re-amplify. Okay, but the amplification is done only in the electronic domain. So basically you take an optical signal and figure out what is the electrical signal and just amplify it and send it back again. Okay. Now when you say reshape, what you can do is you can decode the signal and figure out whether it's a 0 or 1 and then essentially regenerate a 0 or 1. So that way you don't do just analog amplification, but you do digital amplification. This is what things like hubs and etc., those kinds of things too. Now retime means that you actually pick up what is the timing, and so that you don't incur phase jitter and those kinds of errors when you're doing the amplification. So the you make sure that the phase error that builds up on any segment doesn't actually propagate beyond that segment. So 3R in some sense is the best what you could do electronically, But unfortunately, as you try add more R's, they say here, what happens is that you lose transparency. Okay, what is meant by transparency? Transparency is that you'd like to amplify, or you essentially you'd like to increase the strength of the signal, make things go further. But as you do more of these R's, you're becoming more and more dependent upon the modulation format used in the electronic domain. Okay, therefore, if you want to go for higher speeds, you'll have to replace every amplifier or every regenerator. Okay, which is an economic issue. Obviously, you'd like to have a single device that does this abstract amplification process, but it can operate for multiple speeds, and if I add more wavelengths to the picture, it should be able to operate. Okay, so that is the idea of transparency. So all optical amplifiers are interesting because they provide maximum transparency. Okay, what does it mean? It means that I can both increase the bitrate on a channel. If I have a single lambda channel or a single wavelength and I have some electronic signals that are being modulated on it optically, I can increase the bitrate. I can go from 2.5 gigabit per second to 10 gigabit per second, and I don't have to replace the optical amplifier. Okay, whereas in the electronic amplifier, I would have to replace it. Now, the other thing you can do in optical amplifiers is you can actually add a wavelength. Okay, in other words, you can add one more channel in the WDM system. So you go from a WDM system that operates with 16 channels, and then you go to a WDM system that operates, say, with 32 channels. You don't have to replace the optical amplifiers again. Why? Because in the electronic case, you'll have to track each channel, bring it back to electronic form and then do it. Okay, so it was working only for one channel. So if you add one more channel, you're in big trouble. Okay, so the moment you want to go to DWDM or WDM in general, wave division multiplexing, you'd like to do all optical amplification. So there was this component called EDFA, which stands for erbium doped fiber amplifier, which is essentially an all optical amplifier, which could be thought of as the enabler for DWDM. The technology was discovered in mid to late 80s, and then it was commercialized, and costs came down to reasonable numbers, like $500,000 and so on, so which could be afforded not by us, but by ISPs. In the late 90s, okay, and that's why WDM took off. Okay, and the other thing you can do is you can have better fibers. Okay, and we talked about a variety of fibers in prior classes. You could use the dispersion shifted fiber to make the dispersion chromatic dispersion zero, or you can have a non-zero dispersion shifted fiber to add back a little bit of chromatic dispersion so that you can combat the nonlinear effects. If you recall, there was a four-wave multiplexing effect, the four-wave mixing effect, excuse me, that was a consequence of non-linearity. Okay, those kinds of things can be tackled with better fiber. So what people do is they have conduits, and should they want to go further, they add better fibers, use better transmission equipment, which can do more channels, etc., and use some kind of amplifier, excuse me, which operates in a wide band of frequencies. Okay. So a regenerator, as I mentioned, would take a noisy input and then create a clean output, and it would typically have an optical to electronic conversion thing. Okay, and I think I talked about these things. So the next slide, we are talking about regenerators versus optical amplifiers. So we talked about the idea of transparency. Okay, now transparency means different things in different connotations, but in this case what it means is that transparency is to bit rates, transparency is number of wavelengths, transparency to modulation formats. That's what it's meant. Okay, and the real economic issue is if you spend the big bucks on an optical amplifier, you want to upgrade the other pieces of your system without upgrading this for every thing. Okay, so you don't want to be sunk or you don't want to be tied to this optical amplifier technology. So all optical amplifiers have large gain bandwidths. What that means is it can take a large bandwidth or band in the sweet spot and then provide gain for them. Okay, so the bandwidth is large. So we'll see that the gain is not necessarily uniform for every piece of that spectrum, that bandwidth. So you can try to equalize that or play other games with it. Okay, so you can get roughly flat gain for different frequencies or different wavelengths. So if I have multiple channels, all of these channels can get roughly the same gain. Okay, so those are all issues. Okay, so the issues is integrated here. So amplifiers can also introduce additional noise into the system. Okay, and these noise will just add up. And we'll see what is the source of this noise as we study BM doped amplifiers. And this noise sort of accumulates. So this noise, optical amplification is essentially analog amplification. Like in electronic domain, if I had an analog signal and I just bump up the power, you get analog amplification, right? If you do digital amplification, the difference between digital and analog is you first figure out what is the symbol. So you first receive the signal, figure out what is the digital symbol, and then regenerate that symbol. That's why it's called regenerator and not an amplifier. Okay, so whenever you use the word amplifier, it always almost means analog. So when you say digital amplifier, you usually use the word repeater or regenerator. Okay, so there we go. So we will look at the issue of spectral gain, shape of the gain, that is the flatness of the gain, and what to do about it. What are the output powers, etc., and the transient behaviors need to be carefully designed. So we look at it at different level of detail. My goodness, this is bad. Okay, so essentially what happens in this erbium-doped fiber amplifier, which is the exciting piece of technology we look at today, is, as I said, it enables DWDM. What is the structure of the system? You have different lambdas which are coming in. Okay, so these are different wave bands in which you have different channels in the wave division multiplexing system. So you take the spectrum and then you sort of amplify it here. So this is the input-output behavior of it. So the components which are here, the most important components is we have a notion of a pump laser, okay, and there is a piece of fiber into which this pump laser couples, okay, and then you have a piece of fiber in which the amplification action actually happens. So essentially what you're doing is you have the actual signal coming in and you have this pump which is joining into that thing, and then the amplification is actually happening over a length of fiber, okay, and usually such length of fibers are drawn by these circles in optical networking diagrams. So you can think of this is called erbium doped fiber, EDF. So these circles means erbium doped fibers. You can optionally add dispersion compensation within it. Okay, so this is the dispersion compensating fiber, which is part of that. So essentially what you can do is at the stage where you do amplification, you also try to do some dispersion compensation. Okay, but we'll not primarily talk about this part. We'll look at how the amplification action actually occurs. Then what you do is you will take out you have the amplified signal which goes out through here. I'm not even able to read what this is. This is the optical filter. What it tries to do is it just sends out just that band amplified and out. Okay, the other, this 980 nanometer stuff gets out this way. So it is possible for you to actually send the pump laser in the different direction or the reverse direction. Okay, and there is a reason for this. Okay, it doesn't matter whether you send it in the forward direction or reverse direction. Okay, the overall goal here is to change what is known as the population densities of different bands. Okay, anyway, so but the overall goal here is to take a band of wavelengths and amplify all the wavelengths in this band. Okay, in particular, this band we are interested is around the 1550 nanometer band. You want to take a bandwidth around it, and you want to amplify it. Okay, so if you look at we've seen this diagram earlier. We've always talked about the EDFA, which is the erbium doped fiber amplifier. It has a center frequency around 1550, and then it has an amplification region. And in fact, some versions of EDFA can also go into what is known as the L band. Okay, if you recall the fiber bands, there are L band, C band, and S band, all these other things. Okay, so the conventional band is called the C band, and the L band is called the long haul band or something like that. Okay, so EDFA can also be, the concepts can be extended to work in the L band. So that is why we have this diagram which says that this is the kind of amplification we get, and the y-axis talks about what is the output power type thing. So you can have a fairly good range of output powers in this. Now another interesting type of amplification technology is what is known as Raman amplification. It depends upon a nonlinear effect. Okay, of power coupling from a lower wavelength to a higher wavelength, and we talked about the effect earlier. We'll talk about how the amplification occurs. And the interesting thing is Raman is a broadband effect, so it can actually occur over a long bandwidth or a large amount of bandwidth. So it is possible for you to design Raman amplifiers that can amplify signals in, say, the S band, etc. Okay, like the 1.3 nanometer part, you could use the same amplification technology as you use in this area. Okay, we will also see cases where the Raman amplifier is coupled, is combined with the EDFA to provide even higher gain for long haul, ultra long haul applications. Okay, so the most popular real world things that are being used, EDFA is being used in the real world, because 15 nanometer is the sweet spot where a lot of transmission is happening, and for ultra long haul applications, Raman amplification is being combined with EDFA in this region. Okay, and these are the other possibilities. Usually you see this DFA kind of thing. So essentially you have a doped fiber amplifier and you use different elements to dope it. Okay, so this is some ytterbium and praseodymium and something, okay, like that. So so depending upon the sort of material, atomic properties of the material and the energy levels of the material, they provide amplification at different points. Okay, now we'll try to understand what is the principles of this. So the principles, once you understand EDFA, some of the others are straightforward. Only Raman amplifier uses a different principle. Okay, so this diagram here essentially shows, suppose I were to do 20 channels wave division multiplexing in a band. Okay, so this is the 1500, I'm sorry, I can't read much of this. This is 1550 nanometer band. And if I have multiple channels here, if I have 20 channels, what it means is that these channels are equally spaced and you have large channel gaps. But if I have 160 channels, like what is being planned right now, you have separations of only 25 gigahertz. Okay, now I think we talked about the spectral efficiency of these things. I'm sending 10 gigabit per second on a 25 gigahertz channel, which is not a great spectral efficiency from a wireless standpoint, but it's pretty good for this because you want to get rid of, you don't want to do any computation on these things. Okay, but you see here that as I add more and more wavelengths or more and more channels, the spacing becomes small and it's fairly tightly packed. Okay. And so it becomes very important to understand how the gain patterns are for this entire band of frequencies. So so you'd like to have a flat gain region. So this is why one of the most important things is, if I go from a 20 wavelength system to a 160 wavelength channel system, I'd like to have the same optical amplifier and I'd like to stabilize and flatten its gain so that I don't have more amplification for one part and less amplification for the other part. Okay, so So we get into the essential ideas of amplification. Okay, now you will notice that these ideas are also similar for laser operation and LED operation. Okay, so it's important for you to pay attention to this. Okay, so the ideas are very simple. Okay, now if you ask me the question, why do these occur? The answers are not yet fully understood even for physicists. Okay, there is a phenomena which occurs in nature such that for a single atom, you have the electrons which are distributed in energy levels, okay, and these are quantized energy levels. Okay, so this is, we call these energy levels E1, E2, E3, and so on. Okay, and there are other rules like exclusion principles which apply on the occupation of electrons in these energy levels and so on. Okay, so that's the number one. So first thing, atoms or crystals have energy levels. Okay, or fiber is essentially made out of silica. It's essentially a crystal. Crystal means it has a symmetric, structure of all atoms which are the same. Okay, so it's also known as an isotropic crystal. So now, so then what you can think of is this whole thing is one flux of electrons out there with different energy levels. Okay, now what you can do here is, there is an energy level, say E1 and E2. You can sort of pump up electrons or charge carriers, as they're called, from one energy level to the other. Okay. Now, when they go to the higher energy level, they are sort of less stable in that higher energy level. You'd like to come to the lower energy levels. So, so given no other reason, they'll just come down. Okay. So, they might hang out in this energy level for a period of time, which is also known as the lifetime in which they hang out in this energy level, and then they might just drop back to the earlier energy level. So, that basic dropping back from one energy level to the other without any other external stimuli is known as spontaneous emission. Okay. Now, and if I go from one energy level to the other energy level, it's also known as absorption. Okay. When we learned about fibers, we learned about the OH absorption and so on, right? So it essentially What it means is that certain ions and so on, when light is shined at them, for some critical, when that light which is shined exactly matches the band gap between these two energy levels, they will absorb that thing. Okay, if the energy is smaller than the band gap, that energy is not absorbed because of the quantum behavior. Okay, now, so absorption essentially means that light is, the photons are taken in and the electron moves from one energy level to the other. And emission means you transition from a higher energy level to a lower energy level. These are discrete levels, and photons are given out. Okay, remember, photon is a packet of energy, just like mass is a packet of energy. Okay, mass E is equal to mc squared, relates mass to energy, right? So, photons are a packet of energy, and energy is not only related to the weight, it's also related to the frequency, right? H nu, E is equal to H nu, E is equal to mc squared, right? So, when you say H nu or HC by lambda, the packet of energy corresponds to a particular wavelength, okay? So, what that means is that the wave, or you see this diagram which is drawn here, and it's not showing here. Could you point to the slides, please? The diagram which is shown, guys, could you point to the slides? Yeah. So the diagram which is shown here, you have this sort of wavy behavior and this sort of narrow. Okay, this diagram is always used for a wave-particle duality. So it means that sometimes you can talk about it as a particle, like a photon which is being absorbed, a packet of energy, etc. And then you can also talk about it as a wave and ask what its wavelength is. Okay. So when I say a photon is emitted and ask what is the wavelength of that photon, it's a duality idea. And then I'm saying that because these energy levels are well defined, the light which is emitted will also be well defined in terms of wavelength. Okay, you cannot get arbitrary wavelengths. Okay, so you'll just get wavelengths that correspond to the energy gap. Okay, and these energy gaps, even though they are drawn like a straight line here or just a perfect straight line, normally there is some dispersion or there is some as a band of energies. There's actually a group of energies here from which you can jump to a group of energies here. So depending upon the particular number from here to the particular number here you jump, you're going to emit a photon of that energy difference, and that energy will correspond to a wavelength. So what that will mean is that you'll get a spectrum of wavelengths. So if I had exact energy levels here and exact energy levels here, you'll get exactly one line of one wavelength line which comes out, okay, in the spectrum. Okay, so there are only two key ideas you need to remember. Absorption, which means I absorb a photon and jump to a higher energy level, and emission, which means I jump from a higher to a lower energy level and give out a photon. And these tend to be of the same wavelength or roughly around the same wavelengths, around the spectrum, closed spectrum and other wavelengths, because these energy levels are tight, okay, they are discrete. Okay, now there are two types of emissions. One is known as a spontaneous emission, which happens when the transition from higher to lower occurs because of no other reason. Okay, there's no external influence which is doing that. The other type of emission, which is very interesting, is what is known as stimulated emission. Okay, so the reasons why stimulated emission actually occurs are far deeper than I can go into this class, and to some extent it's not fully understood. Okay, so when an optical signal of one particular frequency or wavelength comes in, which corresponds to this gap, okay, an electron which is sitting up here or a charge character is sitting up here will go down, will be stimulated to jump down to the lower energy level, and when it jumps down, it does the usual thing, gives out a photon. But a remarkable thing that happens is that when you give out a photon, or if you think of a photon as a wave, normally a wave has these three parameters. It has wavelength, it has the it has frequency, it has a phase, it has a direction, I mean, and so on, right? So the direction of the wave, which is exactly the same direction as the incoming stimulating photon. The phase of the wave is exactly the same as the incoming stimulated photon. Okay, and also the wavelength and frequency of the waves is exactly the same. So there's exactly the same in all these multiple characteristics is given one name, and that's known as coherent. So when you say stimulated emission is coherent, means that all the photons that are coming out seem to come out of the same direction, seem to come out of the same phase, seem to come out of the same polarization, seem to come out of the same wavelength and frequency. So it's same in all respects. Whereas this is not true in spontaneous emission. Even though it is same, the band gap is the same, and you get waves of the same frequency or roughly the same frequency, they can go in a different direction. They could have random polarization states. Okay, they could have phase, not only the directions, their phases could be different. So that is called incoherent. Okay, so it's important to understand these two things. And so laser is interesting because it's coherent. Okay, and so and you see, a stimulated emission can give you is the seeds of coherent emission. Okay, so once you have an optical signal which is coming in and stimulates something from the higher to lower, you are going to create coherent radiation. Okay, now that's number one. Okay, this is what I call coherent. Okay, now now how do I do amplification of the system? Okay, the idea of amplification is the following. If I have another pump which is absorbed by these lower energy levels and goes to the higher energy levels, okay, now it doesn't necessarily go there in one step. Okay, I'll talk about that complexity in a moment, but essentially what you're trying to do is you're trying to do some magic, essentially using a pump which is throwing energy into the system. It is taking charge carriers from the lower energy levels and pushing it to the higher energy levels, such that at any point of time you look, there are more charge carriers in the higher energy level than the lower energy level. Okay, so this is called, so you can sort of try to estimate the number of charge carriers in each thing. There are different distributions for this. And if you look at E2, there is a number of charge carriers, or population of charge carriers is N2. And the number of charge carriers in E1 is called N1. Okay, if N2 is greater than N1, this phenomena or this condition is called population inversion. Okay, so this sets the environment for lasing and for amplification, etc. Why? Because there's a good pool of electrons here which can be either spontaneously emitted or stimulated, which essentially, if I send three waves here, I have four waves going out here. Okay, which is an amplification action. So at the same wavelength, I have four photons going out. So if you, what is amplification? I sent in number of photons, three photons in, I'm getting four photons out at the same wavelength. That is amplification, right? So this is what is happening. Okay, so you need stimulated emission to create the amplification effect. Okay, and a precondition for that is population inversion, so that you have more electrons or more charge carriers in the higher energy level than the lower energy level, so that you can stimulate it and get it. Okay, now pump is this magical thing that makes population inversion happen. Okay, are we on the same page? So the key ideas here are absorption, emission, okay, discrete energy levels, and the relationship between the difference between energy levels to the frequency, the idea of spontaneous versus stimulated emission, and the notion that stimulated emission is coherent, which is a combination of features, that is phase, propagation, polarization, energy, all these things are all the same. Okay, whereas that is other one is incoherent. So amplification means more, less photons in, more photons out at a particular wavelength or band of frequencies or band of wavelengths, and that occurs essentially through through stimulated emission, at least in this model of EDFAs. Okay, so I think we already covered this. Spontaneous emission means that you can do this E2 to E1 or higher energy to lower energy transitions spontaneously without any external stimuli. Okay, so this is independent of any external radiation or external stimuli. And the bottom line is that the photons are emitted same wavelength, etc., which correspond to the band gap, but they are incoherent. They don't, you cannot define polarization states precisely. Okay, so. So the spontaneous emission. So if you take a matter at equilibrium without this population inversion, right? It has an equilibrium rate at which it does the spontaneous emission. So if there's no other stimuli, there is a basic rate, and this is known as a spontaneous emission rate, or its lifetime, or its inverse is called the lifetime, which is a characteristic of the system, characteristic of the crystal, and so on. So when people study material properties or optical properties of materials, these are all fundamental parameters they study. Now the problem we'll take a look at a little bit later is spontaneous emission can also be amplified, okay? Because the photon which is coming out of spontaneous emission can stimulate another another electron to drop down to the level, and then you will amplify that, okay? So it is possible to actually have amplified spontaneous emission, or called ASE. This will happen if the length of fiber over which all this business happens is long. So that's why when you build an EDFA, you saw the circles I drew, right? So there is a length of fiber in which stimulated emission or the amplification process occurs. So you can not only amplify the signal that's coming in, it's a modulated signal, you can also amplify the spontaneous emission. So for example, when I'm sending a zero, I'm not really sending any zero, any signal, okay? But then there's a spontaneous emission that also gets amplified, right? So this you can view as noise, okay? So spontaneous, amplified spontaneous emission is noise, and it also can saturate the amplifier in certain cases. Okay, so here is the basic sort of diagram you can look at. There is a pump laser or a pump system that takes the low energy reservoir or the low energy band and pumps the charge carriers into a higher energy reservoir. Okay, this could be done in multiple steps. It doesn't go usually in one step from the low energy to the higher energy. Okay, and I'll come to that in a moment. Okay, but so there's a sort of a circuitous route. This this pumping process happens and you land up in this reservoir. Okay, and then when you have an input signal, you do a spontaneous emission and you have a broader signal going out, or broader means more photons going out. Okay, so the way an erbium doped fiber amplifier occurs is this erbium is this magical element here which can facilitate this population inversion which is necessary for amplification. So you have the normal fiber, which is, remember, silica fiber. Okay, what you do is you couple that for a length of fiber with something known as erbium doped fiber. Okay, so it's a length of fiber that is coupled to the real fiber. So it's actually, you'll just have sort of circles of fibers hanging around in a place which is where it's getting amplified. Okay, and then you have a pump here, which is, and you sort of couple this pump to it. Okay, so in this region of the fiber, all this business of pumping and stimulated emission happens. Okay, so as simple as that. Okay, that's the basic picture you want to have. Okay, now let's understand why. Okay, now why this particular element erbium? Okay, it's a rare earth element. So all this ytterbium and all these are all rare earth ions. Actually, it's not just the element; it's an ion. Okay, you basically knock off three electrons from it, and you have erbium 3 plus, and then you have doped the system with erbium 3 plus, and then you use particular pump laser wavelengths at 980 nanometer and 1480 nanometers, and you couple this pump both in and out using a wavelength selective coupler. Okay, we've already learned about couplers, how to mix wavelengths into a length of fiber using a component. Okay, and we learned about sort of directional couplers and so on and so forth, right? So you're basically using a directional coupler here, but it's a wavelength sensitive directional coupler. And you do an isolator at this end, okay? Because here's a fundamental difference between a laser and an amplifier. In a laser, what you do is you can get the signal which comes back and forth, and you get an amplification effect due to positive feedback, okay? So a laser essentially is this stimulated emission phenomena which is bounded by a cavity like the Fabry-Pérot cavity we saw earlier, okay, and brought to a state where there's positive feedback, okay, and we'll study that in a moment, okay. But this isolator here, we saw isolator components we built earlier, but the isolator here is to avoid lasing phenomena within this thing. Okay, so why has this become successful? It's because all the pieces of this puzzle which you need to build this EDFA are there. Okay, so it is possible to build compact and reliable high power laser, pump lasers. Okay, now the interesting thing is that these pump lasers operate at much higher powers than the normal lasers which you use for transmission. Okay, so the transmission lasers, remember, are in the tens of milliwatt range, where these pump lasers are usually hundreds of milliwatts of range. Okay, so that is the kind of power you pump in. Okay, so that's number one. The other part is that some other, like Raman amplification requires even higher pump powers, okay, because it's a nonlinear phenomenon which depends upon a high power or intensity dependent refractive index variation idea. So those are even higher power things. Okay, and EDFA is an all fiber device. Okay, you can basically couple a length of fiber with the existing fiber. So it's easy to do it, and it has some, if you have an all fiber device, it has some nicer properties like polarization independence and so on. And easy to couple light in and out, you don't have to worry about light getting lost. It's fairly simple, and the amplification, the crosstalk, it can be bounded. By the way, there is noise, so remember there's two different things. Noise is different from crosstalk. Okay, crosstalk means that if I have two channels or two lambdas which are going, the signal from one affects the other. Okay, and this is what classically crosstalk is meant. In this model, you do have ASC based noise or amplification, spontaneous emission based noise, but noise is different from crosstalk. Noise is also different from inter-symbol interference. So crosstalk is one form of things that is irreducible noise. Beyond a point, you cannot just ramp up the power and expect it to go away. Whereas this kind of noise, you can ramp up power and make it go away. Okay. So erbium ions, when they are introduced in silica, okay, what happens is there's a process known as star splitting, okay, which I'm not going to go into. Whenever you have a crystal or whenever you have an element or a doping element in a crystal, what happens is that there are these charge carriers, so you have these sort of cloud of electrons and so on, they are dispersed into these bands, right? So when you do this doping business, you rearrange the bands, okay, or you split a particular bands into more bands and things like that. So in this erbium ion doped fiber length, you have a band structure or a band gap structure which looks like this. So you have an E1, E2, E3, E4, which is what we are interested in. We will not consider E4 for the initial discussion. We'll just consider E1, E2, and E3. Okay. Now this E1, E2, E3 is very interesting. Why? Because the band gap between E2 and E1 corresponds to 15-30 nanometer. Okay, which is the magic number we want. Okay, remember that this band gap corresponds to energy difference. Energy difference corresponds to some wavelength. That wavelength is 15-30 nanometer. Okay, so you have a central frequency there, and then you have a small fuzzy thing around that number. Okay, so if I want to go from the center line to the center line is 15-30, but if I want to go from this top point to the bottom point, okay, it'll be lower wavelength. So I can amplify both the lower part of the, so I can take a band around 15-30 nanometers and I can amplify all the stuff. Okay. So depending upon the distribution of charge carriers, if they are equal charge carriers in this fuzzy space, right? So there's equal probability that when I get a photon which is coming in at the lower part of the band, okay, I will find another charge carrier to stimulate and I can get my amplification effect. Okay. So if there are unequal distribution of charge carriers in this band, then what will happen is that you will not have enough charge carriers to stimulate in particular parts of the band. So that is why you have the uneven gain distribution. So if I take a band of frequencies and I look at some portions, at the 15-30 nanometer I get a peak amplification because there are a lot of charge carriers there which can be excited. Whereas in the other parts, I might have lesser or lesser charge carriers of different varying degrees. Okay, so we look at, I think there's one or two diagrams over here. Yeah, so this is a diagram. It shows around the 15-30 nanometer band, you have the maximum amplification, which corresponds to the maximum charge carry density, and the shape of this curve almost fits very well with the distribution of charge carriers as described by Fermi-Dirac statistics or Bose-Einstein statistics. Okay. Anyway, I'm not going to go into those ideas. So, around each band, the ion distribution is non-uniform, and this could be explained due to just thermal effects, thermalization effects. Okay, so that is the region. Okay, so which is a good thing. If you were just to amplify exactly this line at 15-30, it will not be useful because the real information can be transferred only in a band of frequencies. So this noise around this band, this energy level is actually a good thing, because you have the charge carriers to help you amplify. Okay, so this is the idea. So essentially you have a 15-30 nanometer band which is created once you have a band gap, which is created once you dope this thing with erbium. Okay, now it also has another feature which makes it very important. Okay, and that aids the pumping. Okay, so we saw this magic number 980 nanometer. What does that mean? That happens to be correspond to the energy difference between E3 and E1. So what is interesting about this? So when I pump the system, let's say there's a piece of waveguide which I pump. So there are electrons in this waveguide or there are charge carriers. So when I pump it, right, it will be absorbed. These photons which are coming in are going to be eaten up by this by the charge carriers here, and they will jump up. But they will not jump up to E2, they will jump up to E3. Okay. But this is not what I wanted. Okay. What I want is I want amplification at 15-30 nanometer. But fortunately, the lifetime in E3 is very small. So when an electron gets pumped and goes and hangs around in E3, it doesn't hang around for long. It hangs around for some microsecond and then comes down to level E2. Okay, now this difference between E2 and E3 is so small that you don't actually generate a photon. Okay, you will actually generate lattice vibrations. Okay, and these are called phonons. So whenever you have band gap jumps, you can have a mix of photons and phonons which are emitted, and the E3 E2 jump essentially gives out a phonon. Okay, so it's not light, you don't care about it. So, but the bottom line is when it hangs around E2, it has a longer lifetime for spontaneous emission. It has longer lifetime for spontaneous. So essentially what we're doing is we are doing spontaneous absorption to E3, E1 to E3, spontaneous emission from E3 to E2, which is very quick. Okay, so as soon as you form the stuff, it drops back very quickly here. And here, the lifetime or the frequency of spontaneous emission is not very large, so that's good for you because you don't want so much spontaneous emission that it will become noise, right? So here you're going to hang on for a long time and behold what's happening. I mean, you're having a light particle which is coming in from this side and of the exact frequency as this, then you will essentially have stimulated emission. So essentially you're going to have a system where you're going to have primarily stimulated emission and some spontaneous emission. Because of the nature of this band, okay, the particular the lifetime, the spontaneous emission lifetime, and the fact that it's smaller, and the pumping phenomenon is aided by the fact that you have a smaller lifetime here, and also that this magically corresponds to 980 nanometer. Okay, so you see that there is a lot of interrelationship. You have to actually take the right material, study its band gap structure, and see what are the band gaps. Then you'll know, and you also need to study what is the population density, is how is the distributions at every energy level, and then you have to see what are the lifetimes of spontaneous emission lifetimes. So these are the fundamental parameters. Beyond that, I mean, everything is going to be fairly straightforward. Okay, is that clear? Okay, so essentially what you can do is you can use a 980 nanometer pump. Okay, so you can also use a 1480 nanometer pump, which is actually trying to directly pump from this to here. Okay, that's one way of doing it. Actually, there's one more. Yeah, so this is also depicted here. So if you want to go from the lowest energy level here to the highest energy level here, that corresponds to 1480 nanometer. Okay, so you can use the 1480 nanometer pump to pump it up and you can come down. Okay, but this is a less efficient method because of the phenomena I described earlier. Okay, so because what you want to do is you want to create a stable population inversion phenomena so that you can do this, because here you are essentially eating up from here and then going up here and you're coming back here. Okay, so this is a cycle. You won't be able to create a stable phenomenon. But if you go up here and come down here, you're going to create an inversion because of this. Okay, so there are, in fact, erbium actually creates other bands which I didn't talk about. Okay, so there is a 980 nanometer gap, there's an 800 nanometer gap, there is a 67 nanometer gap, there's 532 nanometer gap. Okay. So when you jump from here to here or here to here or the smaller things, sometimes you might emit photons, sometimes you might emit phonons and so on. Okay, and it also depends upon the lifetimes of these things. So sometimes what happens in particular structure of materials, you might actually jump from here to the fourth level, come down to the third level and then come down to the second level, or come down from the fourth to the second and so on and so forth. It completely depends upon the properties of the material and the properties of the band gap structure. Okay, so these kinds of things you'll learn in more detail in solid-state physics. So if you take solid-state physics or optoelectronics, you'll understand these things in more great detail. Okay, so I won't talk about this anymore. So the lifetime in E3 is 1 microsecond, whereas lifetime in E2 is 10 milliseconds, order of magnitude difference. Okay, so there is also another issue about these pumps. Okay, do I actually have these pumps? So what is pumps? Pumps are basically lasers. Okay, there are coherent emission which are coming in. And these have to be high power pumps. Okay, you have to be able to, essentially what are pumps doing, they are coupling energy into this portion of fiber, and that energy is being transferred to a different wavelength band so that you're getting the amplification effect. I mean, you cannot magically get amplification. You have to throw energy and then that energy is transferred to this. Okay, energy is conserved. So you need a high power pump, and high power 1480 nanometer pumps happen to be more easily available compared to these other pumps. Okay, so both of these are used. There is also some other phenomenon of 1480 nanometer pumps. They can be used remotely. So what you can do is you can have erbium fiber thing is just a piece of fiber, right? So I can put it in a hut, but I can keep the pump 70 kilometers away in a cooled location, because these pumps tend to be, you need to have cooled lasers and so on and so forth, and also these require power, right? Anything which requires power is known as an active component. Okay, and one big deal in telecommunications is you don't want to have too many active components at every hut. Okay, because they can fail. Okay, if you have failure, you don't want to send somebody in a car 70 kilometers away and going to change that or fix that. Okay, you'd rather have all these consolidated in one place. Okay, so there are some advantages, practical advantages for 14, 18 nanometer pump, even though they are less efficient, because they're more available, which means they're likely to be cheaper, and so on. So another innovation that was done for DDFA is to use instead of a silica fiber, they use a fluoride fiber, which is also known as EDFFA, or erbium doped fluoride fiber amplifiers. Okay, so they tend to have a flatter spectrum than EDFAs. As I should talk about, the spectrum of EDFA depends upon the charge carrier distributions at these places, and it's non-uniform, and you have to flatten the spectrum by some other means I'll talk about. So these EDFFAs have been proposed as an alternative which has better flatter spectrum, and if you look at the diagram here, the early diagram, there is another dotted line which I didn't talk about. So in a fluoride fiber, they have there is another energy level E4, and the gap between E3 and E4 is also 980 nanometer, which actually is a confusion problem, because when I pump in a photon at 980 nanometer, instead of it being absorbed by E1 to E3, it could also be absorbed by E3 to E4. Okay, and this is useless, because then I cannot get amplification at 1530 nanometer. So this actually, even though it flattens the gain, it is less efficient, because some of my pump power or energy is being lost into useless absorption. Okay, so these are the kinds of issues which are talked. So there's a flatter spectrum, but not very interesting. So EDFA is one out pretty much. So I also mentioned one of the important issues in amplifiers is how flat is the gain. Amplifiers providing a gain on top of the signal, analog gain, so this is measured in dB. So you're talking about 10 to 40 dB of gain, okay, so it's a fairly large range. So if I want to operate in this sort of this band, okay, about 50 to 60 nanometers, say 1520 to 1560, just about a 35 nanometer range here I have, okay, but the 35 nanometer range is pretty good enough, okay, I can pack 160 channels within that, okay. So this is the magical range, but then I need to do something about this non-uniform gains, okay. So these are different curves for different pump lasers which I used. What do I do about this? Okay, you can do two things. One is you can reduce the ripples if they are around the same areas by using some kind of filtering. So the idea is very simple. If I have a gain characteristic that looks like this, you just want to have a filter characteristic that introduces troughs wherever there are peaks in the gain characteristic. So if you add both of them together, you have an output power that looks more flatter. Okay, so that is one piece you can do. Okay, or in general, what you're doing is essentially chopping off the peak. So you get a huge peak at some point, and you can have, I think I talked about, maybe I have it somewhere here. Okay, so you can have fiber Bragg grating in. I think I talked about the chirped fiber Bragg grating earlier. That is an example of, these are filters. Remember, fiber, whenever I say Bragg gratings and so on, these are filters. Fiber Bragg gratings, essentially what it does is this, okay, as far as I can remember. It will take some energy from this region. It will take some energy from a wavelength selective region and then couple it into the cladding. And then as soon as it goes into the cladding, it's dramatically attenuated and it gets lost. So what are you doing? I mean, the trick here is take some energy and lose it, okay. So, from a particular wavelength band. So a chirped Bragg grating, in-fiber Bragg grating does that. Which is slightly different from the basic Bragg grating idea, where if the Bragg grating, the distance are very small, the grating distances are small, that provides a wavelength selective capability. Question?
Where exactly is the second pump used?
Question?
In that figure? The second pump, where exactly is that pump there?
Yeah, okay. That's a good question. Why is the second pump here? Okay. So, the second pump can provide some additional gain. So, you can use both 980 nanometer pumps as well as 1480 nanometer pumps to provide the population inversion. Remember, the original goal here is just to create a population inversion. You don't worry about which way you create this population inversion. So, 980 nanometer pump couples some energy. 1480 will create a couple some energy, and together you create the population inversion. So you can use both. So And the directionality, I don't remember the exact reasons why it is pumped in the reverse direction, but either way, the goal is you pump it here and you remove out the stuff here. Okay. So overall, the idea is that you just want to create that inversion. These pumps are only used for the inversion phenomenon, and then you select it out by using filters on both sides. Okay, and this isolator is one kind of filter that doesn't allow light to come back. So, okay, so this is the diagram. You have a weak signal coming in. You isolate it, put a pump in a coupling region, and then you have a length of fiber which is doped with erbium, and then where this magic of amplification occurs due to stimulated emission. And then you have an isolator and probably a filter, or you can have a chirped in-fiber Bragg grating to sort of flatten the gain, and that's it. Okay, so that's the basic idea. So this is the idea of the most popular amplifier. Okay, it turns out that before people discovered fiber Bragg grating, EDFA, there's a lot of work in other types of amplifiers. Okay. So the usual trend in optics has been the following. You first get a phenomena which you can observe in gases or you can observe in some conditions, and then you try to take the same phenomena and try to make it happen in a micro scale or out of a semiconductor or within a fiber. Okay. So we will also see when the original lasers were all gas lasers and or ruby lasers and so on and so forth. Later people have discovered semiconductor lasers which can be formed and so on. So in the same vein, people try to look at amplification effects or to create essentially a semiconductor optical amplifier, which would essentially be a piece of semiconductor notion that a semiconductor is not the same as a fiber. Okay, so EDFA is beautiful because it's just a fiber. Here, when you essentially have the fiber coming in and you'll hit a block, which is a semiconductor. Okay, semiconductor is a sort of a p-n junction here. And this p-n junction, we know it's very versatile. It's a semiconductor. It can act like a switch. It can also have optical properties. So, so what happens in a semiconductor here is you have a population inversion in terms of the charge carriers of that semiconductor. Okay, so in that sense, the semiconductor is similar in the inversion phenomena as compared to a fiber, okay, which is essentially a crystal. Okay, so there's a small region, which is the intrinsic region in which you are creating this amplification and it will come out. Okay, so the phenomena is very similar. But unfortunately, semiconductor optical amplifiers have crosstalk problems. Okay, the energy from one frequency can get coupled to the other. Okay, because it's not clear isolation of this. Okay, so if I have modulation in one, that will affect the characteristics of this intrinsic region, and then it will affect the charge carrier distribution, and which will affect how the other part is amplified. So this is how, through a multi-step process, you will have interactions between multiple channels. Okay, so this is one of the reasons why semiconductor optical amplifiers, even though very cheap and you can produce them in large numbers, have not been very successful. But we will see them again when we study switches, because they can be used in a switching application. Much better than an amplification application. Okay, so now what we'll do is we'll study Raman amplifiers, which operate by a different phenomena. They do not operate by stimulated emission. What they do is, remember there's a nonlinear effect. When I have multiple wavelengths, lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda 3, lambda 4, which is coming in, after this length of fiber in which the Raman effect occurs, you have energy that's transmitted from the lower wavelengths to the higher wavelengths. So you have lambda 1, which is attenuated, and lambda 4, which is amplified. And the amplification or the gain coefficient profile looks like this. So there is a band of frequencies where there's high amplification, but by the absolute magnitude of the amplification is fairly small. You see these are 10 to the power of minus 14 milliwatts and so on. So you essentially need to have a huge power to have meaningful amplification. Okay, huge power also to have this effect itself. This is a nonlinear effect which only occurs at high powers. Okay, so the amount of amplification is not as dramatic as EDFA. Okay, but it can occur in a more broader band. You see, this band here is terahertz band separation. So you can have a sweet spot here which is multiple terahertz. That's why the Raman amplifier, I think, you know, the diagram somewhere. Okay, you have the you have a much more larger band which can be amplified. Okay, so the idea is again very similar. Yeah, it's very similar. You have a pump which is called the Raman pump, which operates at a lower frequency. Okay, but it operates at a much higher power. Okay, this 0.3 might sound like a small number, but you should remember that these things, the original power lasers are 10 milliwatt. Okay, so this is almost like 100 times, or some of them are also in multiple watts, you can have this effect. Okay, so you need a pump at this magical number, 1453 nanometer, because you know that at the channel separation, after this point, you're going to see an amplification effect. So essentially you're sending in energy at that wavelength, and you know that energy is going to get transferred due to the Raman effect to some other wavelength. Okay, and that's the idea. So you have to create a pump at this wavelength, at this particular power, and you couple it, and you have a length of fiber where this thing occurs. And in this length of fiber, the Raman effect occurs, and over the length of the fiber, the energy is transferred from one wavelength to the other, from the lower to the higher. Remember that lower wavelengths essentially have higher energy, okay, per quanta. Okay, E is equal to hc by lambda. So if you reduce lambda, the energy per quanta increases. Okay, so you're pumping more energy, and then you are transferring part of that energy into lattice vibration, another part into the signal. Okay, so that's the idea. So there are issues with the Raman amplification. I mean, you have some sort of peaks and peak-to-peak variation, which I'm not going to go into, but just want to mention that. So in practice, what you do is Raman amplification can occur in both directions. Okay, it's an effect that can occur in both directions. It's not an effect which is directional. So you can actually use a counter-pumped thing. I mean, so you can have a phenomena where you pump it from the reverse direction, and then you amplify it. Okay, so this has some better properties. I'm sort of blanking out on exactly what the improved properties are, but counter pumping has some better properties compared to the basic pumping. Okay, and you can so in practice, what happens is that Raman amplification combines with EDFA to provide increased amplification for larger distances. So what you do is you have one amplifier site and the other amplifier site, and you use a counter pumping from site to site. So it's a fairly long range of fiber on which this Raman amplification occurs. So this counter pumping is done here. Okay, so I think I mentioned the reason here. I think the idea here is that whenever you build a laser, the laser itself has oscillations, and these are known as pump power fluctuations, and you don't want that to affect your signal. Okay, so I think the effect I mentioned here are due to the pump power fluctuations, pump laser power fluctuations. So if you do the counter pumping type thing, you are averaging over you're averaging this effect over a longer distance, or which also means a longer propagation time. So you notice that this Raman amplification actually occurs over a long distance fiber. From one amplifier site to another amplifier site, you can have hundreds of kilometers or thousands of kilometers, and it is used to augment EDFA. Okay, so the Raman, for every amplifier you need a pump. Okay, and one of the dilemmas is, do I have a pump? Okay, do I have a laser that exactly operates at that frequency? Okay, so in the case of Raman amplifiers, there's been an innovative design which uses the Raman effect itself to get the frequency or the lambda at which you want your amplification, or at which you want your pump laser. Okay, so this is done due to by using just the principle of Bragg gratings we talked about earlier. So here's how it works. Okay, you have a length of fiber which is represented by the circle here, and you have a bunch of mirrors here. Okay, these are the gratings. Okay, and you have some gratings here, and these gratings are wavelength selective mirrors. Okay, so for example, these mirrors internally will reflect 1366 or a small band around 1366. It'll reflect that, but it'll allow all other wavelengths to pass through. Okay, now think about what's happening here. And all mirrors are always partially reflective. They don't reflect fully. So essentially what you're having is a high reflectivity for some band of wavelengths. You're passing the other wavelengths. Okay, And even though it's high, it's not 1. Therefore, you'll pass some part of the signal also. Okay. So, remember what a Fabry-Perot etalon or a cavity does. It will, as you have high reflectivity, the output which comes out essentially will have this sort of nice spectral lines, and you'll have this amplification, right? Or essentially you will have essentially that frequencies that those get passed out. Okay, so that's the goal. So here what happens, you have an input laser that comes at 100 nanometers, and these whole sets of gratings. Can we point to the slides, please? Shucks. Okay, so all these gratings are transparent to that wavelength. So it goes in here, and then at this point there will be some amount reflected from here. Maybe you can put some anti-reflection coating on this side. So what will happen is that this will go in, it will get coupled here. But the moment it hits here, it will start reflecting. So you have essentially a Fabry-Perot etalon working at 1155 here. Okay. And then the wavelength that goes out essentially is slightly frequency shifted. Okay. And it's frequency shifted to 1200 region. And then as soon as it goes to 1200 region, it will start bouncing between these two sets of mirrors, between the two 1218 sets of mirrors here. And then the residual wavelength that goes out will be in the 1288 band. So you will reflect between the 1288 bands, and then 1366, 1455, and then the output power that comes out is a 1455 laser. Okay, and the efficiency is phenomenal. I mean, you pump in 100% and 80% of the power comes out, and there's only 20% lost in this. So you can essentially take a wavelength at which you can conveniently find a high-power laser like 1100, and then do this sort of grating business and use the Raman effect itself. See, Raman effect, remember, how does this thing get transferred from one to the other? It gets transferred because of the Raman effect. The Raman effect will take energy from 1100 and transfer it to 1155. That energy goes here. Then it'll bounce around. You'll have a spectral sharpness around 1155, and that energy will add up. It will be strong enough to create a Raman effect, and the energy will be transferred to a different wavelength, and so on and so forth. So you have energy basically jumping from one wavelength to other in steps till you get energy that comes out in a coherent manner, or a relatively coherent manner, at 1450 nanometer. Okay, so the coherence obviously will be lesser than just a pure laser at 1455, but you get a fairly high power laser with reasonable coherence at this point. Okay, so that's the summary of optical amplifiers. So optical amplifiers are of different varieties. The basic variety is to use stimulated emission. The other variety is to use Raman effect. Okay, and Raman effect is a broadband thing. It can operate at both things. And today the popular stuff is to use EDFAs with Raman supplement. Yeah.
Do you need Raman amplifiers every wavelength
simultaneously? Yes, broadband. So you saw the gain profile I mentioned earlier. Yeah, this diagram, it shows, this diagram, what it says is a gain coefficient. What does that mean? Gain is amplification gain.
Yeah, I thought this meant that it could amplify through, I mean, in that range, but does it mean that it amplifies several wavelengths simultaneously, like in a WDM signal?
Yeah. I'll tell you how. Yeah, good question. You're asking, it amplifies in this range, but where is WDM in this? If you look at this, can you point to the slides, please? Yeah, if you look at this, right, this is in the terahertz, the units are terahertz. The, okay, we keep jumping between terahertz and nanometers, okay, so essentially, if you look at, say, 160 wavelengths, okay, you're talking about, let's look at the magic numbers, 100 gigahertz, right? And I could have 20 channels. How much is that? That's 2 terahertz. So if I look at this band, right, I just need a 2 terahertz band in this. And if I need flat gain in the 2 terahertz band. So what I do is I pump in wavelength here, and then I will sort of look 2 terahertz after. I will look after, say this displacement is k terahertz, okay? I just don't want to say 10 terahertz, right? So I put at 0 terahertz, and then the band from 10 to 12 or 10 to 13, right, gets dramatically amplified due to the Raman effect. And then what I'll do is I'll put a filter, which is what the essentially the Bragg ratings are, to kill out everything else. So even though the others are amplified slightly, you kill it out. So essentially you can create a band that is amplified using the Raman effect. So that's what happens. So this range, even though it looks small in the graph, is misleading. So it is quite a lot of frequencies, quite a lot of wavelengths, much more than what is there in WDM today. So it's amazing. Okay, so let's see. Okay, so I'm not going to go through the slide, but essentially it gives you some more details about the Raman amplifier versus basic optical fiber amplifiers. Okay, so if you look at today's long-haul all optical amplification systems, you have the optical electronic-to-optical conversion that is done here at a DWDM station, and then you have a bunch of amplifiers. So some of them could be, so they are usually, for long haul, there are a mix of EDFA plus Raman capability. After a few of these hops, you put some dispersion compensation. Remember, DCM stands for dispersion compensation equalization. All these words essentially mean you want to take the delay spread and then flatten it out, say, in the time domain. Okay, so that, again, we can do it by some filtering characteristics, and you do a few more hops, etc. So you are in the photonic regime for a long thing. So, and then between this is just your working path. You can then put a protect path and so on. Okay. And you can use the same amplifier to protect both your working path, protect path. Then you have an issue of what if the amplifier goes kaput and so on and so forth. Okay. So when you are designing topologies for WDM and you want to put multiple considerations like protection and so on and so forth, you have to be very careful about that are the components and so on, and how many of them are shared and so on. Okay, but you can basically remain in the photonic regime from here to here. Okay, so the number today is roughly 4,000 kilometers in terrestrial things, so which is cross-country. Okay, I think we've already covered regenerators. Okay, so one of the books I refer to uses the word regenerator in a more ambiguous context. It uses it to also mean amplifier as well as regenerator, as we have studied. So here, the diagram here, which is showed, can you point here, please, slide? Shown, showing, I have a dirty signal and I'm cleaning it up and I'm amplifying it. That is a basic idea. And you have a preamp and a booster. And a preamp itself could be an EDFA and a filter. And then a booster could be, again, another EDFA and a filter, and so on. So these are more details, and I'll not talk about the considerations for these things, okay? So then here, essentially at the end of it, you have variable attenuators or frequency selective attenuators, which are nothing but like our fiber Bragg gratings. Essentially, they're trying to flatten the gains and so on. And you might have a dispersion compensation module to tighten the dispersion at this point. Okay, so that's about amplifiers. Any questions so far? So as we saw, we are slowly building up. We are using the concepts we learned, filters, couplers, right? And multiplex filter couplers, also multiplexers to some extent, and so on. So we use some of them in the amplification, and we are learning new concepts. So we use the amplification concepts as we learn LEDs and lasers. Okay, that's the agenda now. Okay, any question? Okay, looks like we're going to run out of time. Why don't I just stop a little bit earlier today? We are going to do one thing. Okay, so for the in-class people, I will just hand out the class. what is that thing? Evaluation stuff. Okay, so we can fill it out in the break, and I'll give you a few more minutes at the start of class. You can fill it out, and I think the remote people should get the course evaluation forms pretty soon. Okay, so if you have not gotten the evaluation form, let me know. Okay, so please pick it up from Umesh, and after you're done, by the end of the second class, just give it to Umesh. Okay, that's the end of today's class. We'll come to the second class later.